Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Friday to you. Brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. Jaguars Today live at Everbank Field. Oh, Tony, can you hear it already? Stronger today. The voice.
I told you it'd be better
today. Coming
back.
I don't know what it was, man, yesterday. It's just do you get jet lag flying in the same time zone? I don't think it's jet lag, right? It's just a combination of too many cocktails.
It happens.
Not enough sleep and too many germs being spread inside the cabin.
Yeah, weird things happen on planes, man. I know my worst plane experience was I didn't realize I had ear infections in both of my ears once when I got on a plane, and I was deaf for 2 days. When we landed in Nashville, me and my family went up there for a Thanksgiving, and I couldn't hear anything anyone said for 2 days. It was as sick as I've ever been in my life, because the plane started taking off, and I was like, well, that's not comfortable. And then all of a sudden, it was like fireworks went off inside of my head, and I was like, oh, I can't hear anything.
So, like, when the plane landed, did you go to the doctor, or did you just say, well, I wonder if I'm going to be deaf permanently?
No, we knew I was sick. That was the, that was when I had been misdiagnosed. I had mono for like 7 months. And every time I went to a doctor, they would tell me, hey, we think it's laryngitis. And they would tell me they would give me some kind of drugs, right? Like some kind of antibiotics. And they would say, you need to rest and drink a lot of water. Which, what happens if you have mono and you rest and you drink a lot of water? Your symptoms go away for a little while. So I would do that, and I'd be taking drugs, and I'd think I'm fine. And then I'd go start running around again, and I'd get knocked down, and I'd go, and they'd say, oh, it's not laryngitis, it's something else, right? And they misdiagnosed me 3 times, and then it took a flight where I went deaf because of ear infections that I had, plus the mono that I was dealing with. I wound up in an emergency room. They finally took blood and came back 10 minutes later and said, hey, you have mono. And we finally kicked that thing.
Based on that story, we should not be surprised that you have yet to be diagnosed with what the heck is going on with your shoulder.
Medical stuff does not go quick for me.
No, apparently not. And whatever they tell you, I wouldn't necessarily believe it. You made me think of a plane trip we took to the Super Bowl with Monroe Jones. But
that's probably worse. For everyone around it, that's significantly worse.
Yeah, you were in pain, but that didn't bother anybody sitting next to you necessarily.
No.
In fact, you just couldn't hear anything going on around you. So, all right, well, there you have it. Happy Friday to you. Hope you're all out there feeling better than we have been at various points, at least according to those stories. Friday here in what has been deemed the dead zone. Somebody today, who shall remain nameless, said to me, you guys, how are you going to handle the dead zone? And like, he was maniacally cackling at me, like he was really looking forward to the prospect of us landing flatter on our face than we typically do, because
right,
there's not a lot of actual NFL news. Don't worry. When you're in need of NFL news or loosely related NFL news, just turn to Twitter and see if Warren Sapp is trending. I mean, there'll be something out there that'll get you through. We'll get to Warren Sapp later on in the program today. But suffice it to say, just a miserable human being.
Allegedly.
And that's,
allegedly.
No, he's a miserable human being. Whether he did is the latest bout of around domestic violence that he's charged with, I don't know. But I feel pretty
secure in
saying that he's a miserable human being either way.
Previous evidence points to the fact that you can probably, this story's a little more believable given what we've seen Warren Sapp do before.
By the way, you remember when he put the, I don't know, would you call it a blindside block on Chad Clifton?
Oh, yeah.
Chad Clifton's birthday today. You think he's celebrating?
Really?
Yeah. You think he's like, hey, let me go on Twitter and see what's trending on
social
media today on my birthday. But in all honesty, you remember that play, and the NFL has since changed the rules on what you're allowed to do on turnovers. Basically, you're categorizing more players as defenseless players if they're not involved in the play. But at the time, Warren Sapp, remember, there was an interception, and he was looking to take somebody's head off, and it happened to be Chad Clifton, who, as they say, have your head on a swivel, wasn't looking, and basically just got blindsided. Just, as I recall, Tony, just had his head in front of Clifton's shoulder, and wasn't penalized on the play, wasn't fined on the play.
No.
And I defended Warren Sapp on that play. People said, oh, it's cheap, he didn't need to do it. Like, hey, you don't need to do a lot of things. You don't need to play pro football. But you know when you do, there's the chance that you're going to get violently knocked to the ground, particularly if you're not looking at what's happening. And that is a dangerous time when there is a turnover, because all of a sudden you go from a situation where, particularly as an offensive lineman, where you're just trying to maul guys and push them out of the way, to now you've got to make a play in the open field and you got to worry about guys running at you to do what you've been trying to do to them. So just a little irony there with Chad Clifton celebrating his 39th today. Tony, today we're going to celebrate Jaguar history.
Yes, we are.
In a big way. And today we've got a Friday Top 5 for you and I. Folks don't have to weigh in with the full Top 5, but they're certainly welcome to. And it coincides with the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Question of the Day here. The Friday Top 5 for us, we're going to count down later our own suggestions for the top five single game performances by a player in Jaguar history. I say it that way, by a player. I think that, you know, you say, well, that seems redundant. Of course you're talking about by a player. Well, we've had a lot of people suggesting, you know, dual performances or team performances. It's a single game performance by a single player. What are the five best single game performances by a single player? And we'd invite you to weigh in with your nominations on that. Certainly welcome to call the show and look back and make your case for why your favorite is the most significant in team history, or belongs in anybody's top five as far as looking back on some of the great performances. And it has helped. You know, I put this out there on Twitter yesterday just to get people thinking about it for today, and I got a number of suggestions yesterday afternoon, some of them actually involving the question, which was nice. And it helped refresh my memory, and it sent me back to the archives looking up some stats and video of performances gone by. But, you know, it's a shame. I will say this pretty clearly. Once you get outside of that first 5 or 6 year window, the performances that you'll remember all time dwindle considerably. And, you know, you can decide for yourself whether you want to weigh postseason more significantly than regular season. And, you know, was it one big play that made it a great performance? Was it an overall, you know, 60 minutes of work that put up some staggering statistics? Jag certainly had them.
Sure.
And, you know, you just think back to, I think you look at some of the most exciting playmakers this team's ever had. You start with Fred Taylor and Jimmy Smith at the top of the list, and you can come up with multiple instances for both of those guys that I think you could nominate.
Sure, and I think my list, when I whittled it down to five for the actual top five, I think I had it at 9 or 10 when I went through just on my first run of, all right, these are the performances that I want to take into account and then determine who I think the top five are. I kind of had a really good idea of what my number one and two were going to be before we even started it, and I couldn't remember anything that would outweigh those two performances, and we'll get to what those were a little bit later on in the program, but I had it at 10 and brought it down to five, and I'm sure we'll get to those honorable mentions today as well if they're not mentioned by five.
Oh, yeah, I got a list of honorable mentions, and we'll play some of the highlights from some of the great moments in Jaguar history, single-game performances in Jaguar history. But as I mentioned, you can call the program at 641-1010, sending your text as well via the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at the same number, 641-1010. You can tweet the program in a variety of ways, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, and you've got the Jaguars Today Facebook page going as well. So it's all available to you. Give us your thoughts on either your complete top five, as some have already put forth, or just a nomination for one of the best plays, single game performances, an entire game. Which five individual players' games stack up as the best of all time in franchise history? That's what we're looking for today. You know, obviously, this is a show, Jaguars Today. We talk about the Jags, talk about the NFL, mostly exclusively. Sometimes we have a Josh Scobie golf update.
Sure.
When there's a major championship in progress. When the draft is in season, we talk a little bit of crossover with college football. There, you know, and we'll touch on some of the big things going on out there as well. We wouldn't typically be talking about an off-season college football story, and we're not going to dwell on it today, but I think, can we not just all simply agree on this DeAndre Johnson story at Florida State, where he is suspended indefinitely for a violation of athletic department policy, I believe is how they put it. Apparently the athletic department doesn't want you allegedly punching a woman in the face in a bar. If it is in fact true, can we all simply agree, just, he's gone. He's got, then you have to be gone, Tony, especially regardless whether it should matter or not, especially in light of all the stuff with Jameis Winston, the he said, she said, all the negative publicity that came to Florida State, the national tenor, which is, I'm gladly moving towards more stringent treatment of domestic abusers. All this stuff, DeAndre Johnson, if he in fact is guilty of striking a young woman, of punching her in the face in a bar, no matter what the provocation practically to me. I mean, look, she's got a knife to a baby's throat. Okay, you know what I mean? There, you can always come up with some ridiculous exception to the rule, but barring something absurd, he's gone. He'll never play a snap in Tallahassee.
You wouldn't think so, and the competition was already going to be fierce to see if he was going to be able to get on the field for that Florida State team this year anyway, and you have a couple more guys coming in next year as part of that Florida State. I mean, they're reloading constantly, so if they're going to have one of them kind of weed themselves out, unfortunately, with an incident like this, again, alleged incident like this, depending on how it all plays out, but if they're going to weed themselves out this way, then, yeah, he's probably not going to wind up playing at Florida State. And, by the way, while we're talking about this, again, the Tallahassee Police Department, we talked about it when the whole Jameis Winston thing went down. My bigger issue was with how they handled the situation than it was even with Jameis Winston once we had a hold of a bunch of the facts in that particular case. But they release the police report, the incident report regarding this. They redact everything from the report except the location at this bar, the time of the incident, and the victim's name and contact information. The entire summary of what happened in the event, the fact that it was DeAndre, all of that was redacted from the report. The only thing in it was the place, the time, and the victim's information.
You would think you'd almost have to be willfully ignorant or purposefully malicious to make that obvious a mistake
it's
in a situation
so
like this.
Dumb.
It's so, I mean, there's absolutely, now, I don't know if she's accused of doing anything in this report that's completely redacted to precipitate this. I'm not saying that is a legitimate excuse for hitting. I don't know, you know, so I don't know what the way the storyline went, but certainly you would think that would be what the primary thing that would not get mentioned in the report was the name of the victim.
You would think so, yeah, but. Apparently not.
Apparently not. So there you have it. So, you know, look, I don't know DeAndre Johnson from a hole in the wall. You know, if it's true, I don't think we're going to get to know him very well as a Florida State Seminole at the collegiate level. All right, if you want to get in today, off the soapbox as far as that goes, it wasn't a long step down this morning. That was a pretty easy one. 641-1010 is the way to do it. Just getting rolling, looking for the best single game performances today, and we'll throw some highlights at you out of some of those great plays that led to those single game performances along the way as well. 641-1010 for both the call-in line and the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. He's Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Tyler Devitt back at 1010XL World Headquarters. We're live at Everbank Field. It's Jaguars today. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Just getting going here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
11:35 to play in overtime. Pressure coming. Maddox turns and throws. It's intercepted. Rasheem Mathis has got it. He's going to the 20, the 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Jaguars. They beat the Steelers.
What a play by Rasheem Mathis.
Tyler Devitt, are we on the same page this morning? Huh?
What's that?
Tyler?
Yeah.
Are we on the same page? What highlight did you just play?
The Rasheem Mathis against the Jags, or against the Steelers, the overtime winner.
Right, didn't... We've had this conversation, have we not, Tony?
I could have sworn
we had this conversation where we wanted the Rasheem Mathis interception return for a touchdown against the Steelers in the 2007 playoffs.
Yeah, we discussed it this morning.
Correct, and that's not it.
That was the game winner you were talking about. You wanted, right? No? Am I wrong?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
You're wrong.
It was not a game winner in the playoffs.
No, it's just a pick six.
Yes.
Still a great play, though. Still a great play.
Don't try to save yourself here, okay? Top five worst performances by a producer on Jaguars today. You're leading the list today so far. You're in the top five. You got the top five to yourself. Yeah, I'm in one of those moods today.
Yes, you are.
Tyler's going to get in my crosshairs. That's just, you know, somebody's bound to.
I'm staying out of it.
Are you?
I'm staying out of the
conversation. We did have that conversation though, right? I thought we did
this. No, I listened to the whole thing and
before the show.
I thought it was pretty clear that we wanted the touchdown against the Steelers in the playoffs.
The playoff game. Right.
Right, that doesn't mean that the overtime.
It was a nice play.
It was a great play.
I wouldn't call that one of the best single game performances in team history. When you do it in the playoffs, when you've had one interception in the regular season in 2007 all year long, and you have a 63-yard pick six and another interception of Ben Roethlisberger in helping lead the Jags to become the first team to ever win twice in Pittsburgh as a road team,
sure,
in the same season. That would qualify
Mathis,
for a great single-game performance.
Rasheen made himself a career against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
He did quite well.
He was really good against that football team.
Yes. He continues to play well, according to all the pundits and the number crunchers and the analytics types.
Yes.
Who love what he's been doing up in Detroit for the last few years, you know, and you thought, well, Shaq Harris has brought him in to give him kind of a golden parachute into retirement, but he's played well. He's been a starter for the Lions for a number of years and continuing to go strong. He fit into yesterday's category too, which asked you for your favorite all-time Jacksonville-born athlete. So there you have it. Tyler Devitt off to a rousing start this morning. My sorry, he says. Hey, don't try to get back in my good graces like that. Don't try to disarm me.
It's Friday. Come on.
With humor. Huh? I know it's Friday. I've only been here one day this week. It's Tuesday to me, all right? We should be in midweek form right now.
Let's go to the phone lines.
We should not have senioritis. Don't you direct this program.
I'm halfway checked out. It's Friday.
Are you? Or is he? No, he's fully checked out. You may be halfway checked out. Let's go check out Ed on the line this morning, 641-1010, if you want to participate in the program today. Well, good morning, Ed. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Good to talk to you guys. Hey, I just wanted to say that I so wanted to come up with an individual performance from the 62-7 playoff game, but that was such a team effort, I couldn't do it. But the James Stewart 5-touchdown game early on, I think against Philly, has to rank up there. I mean, 5 touchdowns, one guy. He had to leave his mark with that. And
I agree with you. Go ahead. Sorry,
yeah.
Finish your thought.
For a sleeper pick, you don't normally think of, even though he's, you know, a greatest Jaguar all time, you don't often think of offensive linemen as having a standout performance for a game. But if you remember the 96 playoff game in Buffalo, we were such underdogs, and Tony Boselli totally shut Bruce Smith down. And that was a huge upset. I think it was the first time Buffalo had been beat at home in the playoffs. And so that's my second pick for best single player performance is Tony's up there in Buffalo.
That's a very good one, actually, and that is a sneaky one because you don't get any stats for that, Tony, other than a big zero
no.
on the score sheet that next to Bruce Smith's name. And we found out Bruce Smith is a big whiny baby coming out of that game as well, talking about how many times he was double teamed and didn't want to give Boselli any credit for basically shutting him down, and that put Tony's name out on the national landscape. I mean, we knew he was going to be good. You're expected to be good when you come in as a second pick in the draft, but Tony,
yeah.
Tony, more so, he wasn't, Luke Joko didn't come in with the attendant, hype and expectation of Tony Boselli. Tony Boselli was regarded as a much better prospect at the time. Luke Joko suffers by comparison because they play the same position, they went in the same spot in their respective drafts, but he did. He went up there and he blanked Bruce Smith, and people were like, hey, wait, who is this guy down there in Jacksonville? And who knows how long it would have taken Tony to get that kind of recognition, even though he started making Pro Bowls practically immediately and made 5 in his 6 full seasons here in Jacksonville. But doing that on the national stage, sparking the upset, and then having the Jags be in the conversation for another couple of weeks because they were able to go to Denver and keep winning, definitely cemented or started to cement Tony on the public consciousness, and then he cemented himself as one of the great offensive linemen of the era with his continued play on the field.
Yeah, I mean, if he had been able to play another 2, 3, 4 healthy years of football, he probably would be being talked about as a Hall of Famer, which is still something. He's on the fringe of that discussion right now, but Tony was a dominant player of that era at that position. What he did to Bruce Smith that day, I mean, it was unreal, the way that he dominated the guy who was number one on the all-time sack chart. I mean, this is a guy who is an all-timer getting after the passer, and Tony Boselli completely shut him down.
Who was the Miami Dolphin offensive lineman in the early 90s-ish that's in the Hall of Fame now? I want to say center, for the Dolphins. As soon as you say his name, you'll be, oh, yeah, 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 that guy. Point being, I believe if you look at his numbers, he started fewer games than Tony did in his NFL
career. Because we've talked about this before.
And I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head right now. And I will endeavor to look it up on my space age technology. Unfortunately, the space age took place in the 1960s. So I'm working with ENIAC 2.0 right now. Let's go to the phones once again, 641-1010. Gary, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I think you're thinking of Dwight Stevenson.
It is Dwight Stevenson. Yeah, played. I want to say started fewer games than Tony did in the National Football League.
Yeah, you talk about dirty plays. Marty Lyons took him out on a kind of a dirty play, an interception that basically ended his career at 30. Marino saying it was the saddest day of his life.
No Jet player was ever guilty of any dirty play ever. Hush your mouth, sir.
With being a Dolphin fan, there's so many Dolphin plays to choose from, Tony and Mike. But I guess for your Jaguars, I guess it would be the Jimmy Smith 200-plus yards receiving in that game. What do you have, 11 catches?
In which game are you talking about, the 62-7 game? Hello?
I guess that was where he had 230 receiving yards.
Jimmy had 291 receiving yards against Baltimore back in 2000. That's the one you're thinking of. Because Keenan had a game where he had 230-plus yards.
It was like 16 catches.
Right, 16 catches. You know, that one stuck into honorable mentions for me. Let me see. Game start. Now I'm hung up on Dwight Stevenson here. Get me how many games Tony Boselli has started in his career, Tony, if
you
could.
I will look it up.
Because I don't think this computer is going to handle both web pages at the same time. But I got Dwight Stevenson is starting 87 games in the National Football League. I think Tony's got him covered.
90,
right? So Tony Boselli started three more games than Dwight Stevenson. Does anyone suggest that Dwight Stevenson is a bogus Hall of Famer? I mean, it just seems odd to me that's okay and it's just accepted. He started in his first 3 years in the league, he started a total of 14 games. So then he started all 16 games 4 years in a row. And his final year, he played less than a full season and went into the Hall of Fame in 1998.
Yep. Second team, all 90s, all decade team, according to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Tony's second team, all 90s.
Willie Rofe, Gary Zimmerman. The two starters there tackled, then Richmond Webb and Tony Boselli, the other two mentioned.
All right. Even if Dwight Stevenson is all-decade team himself of the 1980s, and I don't know that he is, so what? I mean, first, second team. Well, Tony gets held out, people say, because he didn't play long enough. He played games-wise. He started more games than Dwight Stevenson. Enough. I'm off the soapbox once again this morning. But, Jimmy had a huge game. Obviously, did that against the Baltimore Ravens with 15 catches, 291, and three touchdowns. That will, I have a feeling, feature prominently in the top five today. Keenan McCardell had that game, Tony. I want to say it was 96 against the Rams. He had the 16 catches for 232. Do you remember, though, the outcome of that game, how that game actually played out?
The Jimmy Smith game?
No, the Keenan McCardell game.
No, I do not.
16 for 232. This was October 20th, 1996, against the Rams. Jags lose 17-14. 14. They scored 14 points. The man had 16 catches for 232. Mark Brunell, not one, not two, not three.
It was one of those days.
I'll just cut the suspense. He got to five that day with the interception total. Wasn't the finest day for Mark Brunell. And don't forget, you know, a couple of people have mentioned this on Twitter, and some of them have gotten the details wrong.
It's one of those days where you get like 450 yards of offense and 14 points.
Yes.
Like you're just moving the ball, pick.
Very frustrating kind of day. But it did show you some of the offensive potential of this football team that year. This is before they got on the hot streak to end the season in 96. Go back to 2012, Tony, one of the few of recent vintage. And you had Justin Blackmon against Houston. Same day, by the way. Andre Johnson went bananas against the Jaguars secondary. I believe I looked it up early. I believe Andre Johnson's numbers that day were 14 for 273 against the Jags. But Justin Blackmon, on a mere seven catches, put up 236 yards, averaging 33.7 yards per grab, including an 81-yard score. Somebody alert Ryan O'Halloran that this guy used to be pretty good. And apparently, if you do score on an 81-yard touchdown in the NFL, I'm going to assume you could run a little bit. at some point in your career. Couldn't tell you what he's up to these days, but on that day against the Texans, November 18, 2012, Justin Blackmon, at least enough for an honorable mention as far as the best. You know, and really, if you talk about maybe the top 10 single-game performances, it might squeeze its way in there. Statistically, you know, you can talk about the import of the game and who wins the game, and all those things can factor in. So, if you want to put a playoff performance of a smaller statistical measure up in your top five, hey, that's up for you to decide. 641-1010 is the number if you want to get in and weigh in with yours. Best single-game performances. It's tougher to remember the defensive ones. You know, Doom sent in a list this morning and had several defensive games on there. You may have heard of the one Rasheen Mathis game against Pittsburgh in the playoffs in 2007. Anyhow, you don't think of those as much because it's so easy. You look at a box score. You remember Fred Taylor ran for 234 against the Pittsburgh Steelers with four touchdowns.
Right.
You remember James Stewart ran for five touchdowns. You remember the big offensive plays, I think, more often than you do the big defensive plays. So nice job there by getting Tony Boselli and his game as an offensive lineman mentioned in there as well. 641-1010 if you want to get on board. I'm Mike Dempsey. He's Fat Tony. Tyler Devitt on Short Leash today, ladies and gentlemen. Back at the studios. Give us a call at 641-1010 and weigh in with your nominations for the best single-game performances in Jacksonville Jaguar team history. It's Jaguars today. It's a call, Nolan Cadillac Friday. Back in a moment at Everbank on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
And it's a draw again. Taylor going outside. He's at the 10. Breaks a tackle. Looking for room inside at the 15. Outside. There he goes. It's a foot race. Taylor's gone. He's at the 40. He's at the 50. He's at the 40. He's at the 30. Taylor to the 20. Taylor 10. 5. Touchdown. Jacksonville. 90 yards.
Oh, that would be Jaguar Radio Network, Brian Sexton on the call. Longtime voice of your Jacksonville Jaguars. What a beautiful day. 62-7. 90
Brock yards. Marion chasing.
He's still chasing.
Brock Marion still chasing.
Oh, what a beautiful day. Jimmy Smith and Mike Hollis already have the Jags up 10-0. Freddie T goes 90 yards in the first quarter. Tony Brackens would score before the quarter was done. He'd score 25 seconds later, as a matter of fact,
yep.
Tony. And it was 24-0 in the first quarter, and the laughter was on. The issue with that game is everybody did so much so quick
right. That
no one guy stuck around long enough to put up this the monster statistical totals. As I was going through and making an honorable mention list, I just wrote down 62-7. Everyone, just, they all had the best day in Jaguar history, at least as a complete performance. Not the most significant day. It was a great day. Had they been able to go on, certainly, and go to the Super Bowl, you'd remember it even more fondly. I think those 96 games more significant, despite the not as statistically dominant as we saw on that particular day. But what did Freddie T have in that game, Tony?
That day he went 18 carries for 135 yards, including that 90-yard touchdown. So that's 7.5 a clip that game.
You think about it, though. He had 17 carries for 45 yards.
Yeah.
Outside of that one. But that's how you sometimes have those 7-yard carry games. You don't usually rip off a 90-yarder, but you go 3, 4, 2, 0, 60, and that's just how it goes sometimes.
He also had the 39-yard touchdown reception game as well.
If you want to nominate Fred for that game, you're certainly welcome to. I mean, not saying he wasn't spectacular. Fred's had a number of spectacular performances, that among them. Jimmy Smith on that day, 5 catches for 136 yards and 2 scores, including a 70-yard touchdown. That would come later in the game, but Mark Brunell was only in there long enough to throw 9 passes. He completed 5 of 9 for a couple of scores, got the heck out of Dodge, and gave way to Jay Fiedler, who threw for a 172, one of the most efficient 170-yard passing games in league history, 7 for 11 passing with 172 yards,
right,
and a couple of scores, just bombing it all over the field.
I don't think there's and Dolphins fan can speak to this, but I don't think there's anything more humiliating than watching your opponent just put in the second team in a playoff game, right? Like, in the second half of a playoff game, they just say, Let's save them for next week, guys. I don't think there could possibly be a more humiliating feeling.
Right, we're good, we're done, and we're done midway through the second quarter.
Yeah.
And you can't stop us. And by the way, Dan, enjoy retirement.
Right.
And you too, Jimmy. See you later. Have a good day. It was a great day. 62-7, man. Chris Howard came in and got some run. 15 carries for 54 yards and a touchdown for Chris Howard. It was running it up, baby. It was fantastic. Oh, man. They couldn't slow down Aronde Gadsden, though. You know, couldn't shut out the Dolphins thanks to Aronde and his 62 yards receiving. And he did catch that one touchdown pass. Bully for him and Dan Marino. There you go. There's your trivia question. How many yards did Dan Marino throw for in his final game? That'd be 95. Mm. Oh, good day. Good day all around. All right, 641-1010. Today, on this Friday, I brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. Jaguars today here live at EverBank. We're talking about the greatest single-game performances in Jaguar team history. I believe we have Carl on the line next year on 1010XL. Good morning, Carl. How are you?
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
We're good. What's up, man?
Hey, how about Leftwich up in Buffalo with that drive where he converted a 4th-and-12 to Jimmy and then on the goal line, 4th-and-1 to beat the Bills?
You know what? I don't think it's one of the greatest single-game performances. That was pretty damn good. Was that Leftwich's debut?
Yeah.
Right, that was his debut game to come in there. And you're right, he hit that big one to Jimmy. I remember Byron talking about it, man. And he had that right from the beginning. He had that trust in Jimmy Smith with good reason. He would throw it up in his vicinity. And you're right, he hit Wilford at the back of the end zone, man. And
it's one of our opens.
It is one of the opens to this program. And I think at that time, people were thinking, wait a minute.
Hey.
Terrell Suggs, who? Are you kidding me? We got Byron Leftwich here, and we finally got the next guy that's going to take us to even greater heights. And remember the mythology around Leftwich at that time, Tony, was so big because of that game in Marshall where he had the broken leg.
Yep.
And he just stands in the pocket tall and just ripping balls all over the field. And then two linemen would come, and he put his arms over their shoulders, and they would practically carry him to the line of scrimmage because he's completing it 20 yards, 30 yards downfield. Boom, let's get him up to the next snap, and let's just let this guy stand like a statue in the pocket and rifle the ball around. And you thought, wow, this is what you want. You want the quintessential pocket quarterback, big arm guy, tough as nails. Nobody ever questioned Byron's toughness. Just didn't have it all together, you know. But that first game certainly made you think big things were in store for him and his career here in Jacksonville. All right, thank you for the call. There, Carl, let's go to our good friend, Spinner Howland. G'day, mate. How are you?
G'day, mate. What's happening?
What's going on, brother?
Mate, look, for me, it's the first NFL game I ever got to watch. It was before I lived in Jacksonville, before I even knew I was going to move here. We're in Jacksonville with a trainee, with a team out of the UK that was here for training camp in 99, and we got tickets to that playoff game, and everybody we talked to said, how lucky we were. We're going to witness history. There's this guy called Dan Marino. He plays for the Dolphins. He's unbelievable. All we heard about was we're going to go and watch this great legend, Dan Marino, finish his career. So we get down there. We're super excited. And not far into the game, I don't remember. I want to say it was Tony Brackens, but the score was already racking up. But I think it was Tony Brackens picked up a fumble from someone, and he's run it in for a touchdown. And we've all just started looking at one another that, yeah, we're going to witness history here, aren't we? This poor guy's going to get absolutely spanked by some guy called Mark Brunell. We had no idea who anyone was. We had to go get a program to actually figure out who Mark Brunell was. And, mate, from that day, before I even lived in Jacksonville, that was going to be my team. I'm like, these Jaguars are pretty damn good. They got this Marino guy and just taught him a lesson.
So, you got spoiled, man.
I always remember Brunell for that.
I mean, you talk about a case of getting spoiled. They say Jag fans got spoiled, Tony, because they got it too quick in 96. They had to wait two whole full seasons to get
that. First football game is that.
62-7.
Stomping.
Spinner,
it was unbelievable.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Spinner, tell what's going on with the Axemen these days, brother?
Mate, yeah, look, they're 1-2 on the season, but they're home this weekend to Atlanta, so I think they're all fired up. There was good sessions this week. They're on more tonight. But, yeah, no, they'll get a W this weekend. I got faith in the guys, and they're pretty ticked off that they're at an under .500 record. So I imagine we'll be underway here pretty quickly on the game tomorrow.
It's early. It's early in the season. We're not concerned, man. The Atlanta Rhinos taking on the Jacksonville Axemen this Saturday, as a matter of fact, tomorrow, and tickets available by going to jacksax.com. Love supporting our local affiliates out there in all the variety of sports. Spinner, good to hear from you, brother.
You too, mate. Hey, and all the sports affiliates love you too.
All right, especially the Axemen. We have particular fondness.
Yes,
for
we
those,
do.
I don't know where I was going with affiliates, man. Sometimes I talk and this, I have to say stuff a, just a comes word. Out. Yes.
Spinner joins me every Tuesday night, by the way.
I know he does.
For the Chop Zone at 8:30. So if you are an Axemen fan and haven't checked it out yet, it's time that you do.
The Chop Zone.
The Chop Zone.
I like that.
Tuesday nights at 8:30.
I like that. I wish I was clever enough to have come up with that myself, but unfortunately that was not the case. I have going back, I couldn't give you chapter and verse on it. I think the Axemen have put on some equivalent type performances over the years.
Oh, the Axemen have been a dominant franchise.
They've been a dominant franchise, yeah, in rugby league action here, the United States Rugby League. So, good to catch up with Spinner from time to time. 641-1010, if you'd like to get on board and weigh in, whether 62-7 was your first game or not. Talk about some of the great individual performances in team history. You know, one guy, Tony, that doesn't get mentioned enough, and he's certainly in Jaguar fans' minds for the lore of the run in 96, but go back to those first two playoff games in 96. I want to say, in the regular season, that Natron Means had one 100-yard game.
He did. One.
Was it one in the entire regular season?
Yep.
And they go up to Buffalo, and not only is Tony Boselli shutting out Bruce Smith, but that offensive line in total is helping Natron Means average over 5.6 yards per carry. 31 carries, a buck 75 that day, and he scored a touchdown. And then he decided, hey, why don't we double that output in terms of how many 100-yard games I've had in the postseason by going for 21 for a buck, 46.67, 6 2/3 yards per pop against the Denver Broncos the next week. And Natron chipped in with 4 catches for 46 yards. So back-to-back games, neither of which may be among the top 5 single best performances in team history. But considering the circumstances, going for 315 yards against Buffalo and Denver in back-to-back weeks is pretty astounding.
Yeah, we'll get to our full top five here in a bit. But it was funny when I was looking through the list, and because of how dominant that run in 96 is, right, in Jaguars history. You mentioned the 99 game. We played the Fred Taylor highlight, the 90-yard touchdown run, and it was, you had it on your honorable mentions, but it was like, it's just that win. And it was what everybody did in that win. And while I picked out a couple of performances from those two wins in the 96 playoffs for my top five, I almost feel the same way about them, right? Because there are, like, in each game you can go, well, it was Boselli and blank and blank and blank in the Buffalo game. And you can do it for both of those games. And what there were key moments, and maybe that's what you point to in the end when I'm doing my top five list, but both those games feel a lot to me like that 99 playoff game and trying to pull out one performance, because it really was an underdog team pulling together as an entire performance that got them those two wins on the road in that playoff run. But that doesn't mean I didn't pick out a couple from it too.
Obviously, if you're talking, it's a different argument if you're talking the five single biggest plays in team history, right?
Certainly. Yeah.
But some of them would overlap. I mean, you go to Jimmy Smith's 291-yard game, I can't remember a single play from that game. You know, I can't remember what the touchdowns were. Maybe if I saw the video and refreshed my memory, I'd say, okay, vaguely, but I'd probably be lying. I can't tell you what specific plays happened in that game. You go to Mark Brunell in the 96 playoff game, you can certainly visualize that in your mind's eye. You can do that with a number of guys over the years as well. So factor it in as you see fit. Tweet the program, you know the ways, and post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, but give us a call at 641-1010 or text us on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at the same number. It is a Claude Nolan Cadillac since 1905. They've been serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida. Stop in, tell them Mike Dempsey sent you, by the way, and say hello. Our Friday sponsor, it's Jaguars Today, coming back with this date in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, it is time for this date in football history, and today we're presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Tony, we're awash in birthdays on this date.
Hey!
An interesting collection.
Spread them out a little bit, guys.
Why not? Nah, we'll take them. We'll take them. It's Friday. I don't need any for Saturday and Sunday, so let's stack them up today. Going back to 1968, it was a wonderful year, 1968. All the cool people were being born. And Shanna Sharp came into this world, and what are you laughing at?
Shannon Sharp, the Jaguars fans, just they go at Shannon a lot.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah.
They do. And I wouldn't put him necessarily in the collection of cool people. I was thinking more me.
And the last thing that I saw them going after was the Triple Crown when American Pharoah won. They're like, congratulations to Shannon Sharp on his Triple Crown.
I mean, let's be honest. Guy looks like a horse. He's got some horse. He's got some equine qualities.
He does.
He has equine qualities. Shannon Sharp, however, was an 8-time Pro Bowler, 4-time first team All-Pro, and played in a pretty good tight end era, by the way. Turns 47 years old today. How many Super Bowl rings for Shannon Sharp?
Three.
That would be three. Two with Denver and one with the Baltimore Ravens. Also born in this state, 1975. Let's all go out to Phillips Highway and celebrate with Stacey Mack, 40 years young today. Stacey, with his name came up on the program yesterday, as I remarked to Fred Taylor on a post-game show this season, how many touchdowns could Freddie T have scored had they not let Stacey Mack come in and score 9 in consecutive seasons? Freddie beamed at that one and really did. It was, if you missed the conversation, we were talking about it yesterday. It really was flat out said, hey, I had escalators in my contract. I was going to hit some performance incentives, and they did not want me to hit them. And that is why they wouldn't give me the ball at the goal line. Some would argue Fred danced too much and didn't hit the hole hard enough. But certainly 232 yards, I think Fred could have picked up 1 yard when necessary, a little bit more. But he also had injuries early part of his career. Regardless, Stacey Mack, happy 40th. Also born on this date in 1976. We mentioned earlier Chad Clifton, who, is probably having a little Schadenfreude going on today with his boy Warren Sapp, who cleaned his clock back in the day, getting in trouble once again, this time for domestic assault, allegedly. And also born on this date in 1976, Chad Pennington turns 39 today. You know, he led the league twice in completion percentage. I found that semi-interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And born on this date in 1980, noted dogfighter Michael Vick.
Really?
Yes. 35 years young. That is this date in football history, brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Call them at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. There you go. This date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
NFL Hall of Famer and former NFL Network analyst Warren Sapp is back in the news. Sapp was arrested during Super Bowl week in Phoenix for assaulting and soliciting a prostitute. Now Sapp is being charged with 3 counts of domestic battery after an April incident where he allegedly bit his girlfriend, then threw her to the ground and stepped on her head. The 3 charges are all misdemeanors that could carry up to 18 months in jail if he's convicted.
You know where he's accused of biting her? No joke. Her middle finger.
Yeah.
Makes me think. He said something, being Warren Sapp, she shot him the bird, and he bit her middle finger. Otherwise, why are you biting her
right
on the middle finger? I don't know.
Class act.
Yes.
That's what that guy is. Well, that's one clear example of NFL players doing the wrong thing. Here are a couple recent examples of them doing the decent thing. Cam Newton, along with Dwight Howard, took time earlier this week to visit the families of the victims in the Charleston shooting from last week. Cam told David Newton of ESPN.com, quote, "Why didn't I go? That's the thing I would have had to question myself if I didn't go. I'm happy I did, and so much respect to those families who lost their loved ones." There's one NFL player doing the right thing. Here's one more, Peyton Manning. Logan Brown, just 15 years old, was killed in a March head-on collision with a drunk driver. Logan's grandmother wrote Peyton because he was Logan's favorite player, explaining how much he looked up to him and how he had passed away. On Tuesday of this week, which would have been Logan's 16th birthday, Logan's family received a package in the mail from Peyton that included a handwritten letter and a photo with Peyton's signature and the insignia in memory of Logan Allen Brown on it. So pretty cool of Peyton, man, to take some time out to do that for a fan who passed way, way too early.
Yeah, you know, it's a nice remembrance. I'm more, I think, touched by Cam Newton in this circumstance,
sure.
You know, showing up and, you know, but either way, it's not to diminish anything that Peyton did in that regard. They're both nice gestures in their own way.
I like to have nice gestures. I mean, it's the end of June. Most of the news we're going to get is going to be really crummy when it comes to the NFL right now.
Honestly, the Jags, and I know this is the way around sports in the National Football League because teams want their players to be proactive in the community, have that bond. But particularly in the NFL, when you've got that schedule set up during the season, Tony, where you know you're going to have Tuesdays off, so many of these guys give up at least part of their only guaranteed day off during the week, and they go visit hospitals, they go to schools, they read books to kids,
they do
fundraisers, they do car washes, they do so many different appearances, and the old adage in journalism, not that we are ever going to be accused of being that, is if it bleeds, it leads, right? Meaning the more salacious the story, the more people are going to want to read about it.
Absolutely,
yeah. This is the way human nature is, but there are a lot of good stories happening out there. By the way, shame on us, or shame on me primarily, but you included. Rasheen Mathis, born in Georgia, according to one of our texters, and moved to Jacksonville in grade school. So we always consider him from Jacksonville. I guess I never realized. I just assumed he was born here. And shame on me and shame on Rasheen.
Can we get a my sorry, please, from you? My sorry. Thank you.
My sorry. Yeah, you watch yourself, pal, okay? You're now occupying all the top five spots in the worst producer moments in the history of Jaguars Today and 1010XL Radio as a whole, all right? 641-1010 if you'd like to get in. We got this one from the Propane Man. Propane Man just started following me on Twitter, Propane Man 9 on Twitter, which reminds me of another one I'll tell you about in a minute that just started following me on Twitter. Don't you do that when someone follows you? Don't you have to click and say, well, who is this person?
Yeah,
why are they following
me? Yeah.
Yes. What are their likes and interests?
Or if it's someone I don't know that like favorites or retweet something that I put up, like, are you?
That's interesting. Why are you looking at this? You know? So anyway, Propane Man saying in all caps, not just in all caps, not saying it's the best, but deserves some love. David Garrard against the Cowboys in 2010. We were just talking about that one off the air.
Yeah.
Five total touchdowns. And that, to me, is the poster child game of don't just look at the schedule and say win-loss, right? And maybe in Jaguar history, if you go back to what year was that, Tony? Was that about like 2010-ish, something like that, right?
Somewhere around there, yeah, 2010.
Jags playing the Dallas Cowboys and on the schedule, on the road against Dallas. Jags are just eh. And you thought when the schedule came out, well, that's the hardest game of the season, right? That's the one, the least likely W of all. If you're going through and playing the win-loss game in the preseason on what your projection is going to be, everybody had that was an L. It's the easiest win of the year.
Yep.
Jags totally dominated the Dallas Cowboys that day and just goes to show you. Tony, that's why they play the games.
No doubt that's why they play the games.
Is what they tell me.
Situations like that. I got a list here for you. I know.
What do you got? Oh, I enjoy a fun list.
Always
sometimes.
A good time for a list.
Thank you, Hacker. What do you have for me?
Adam Schein of NFL.com put out DeMarco Murray heads his NFL's most fascinating players of 2015. He's got 9 players listed. DeMarco Murray is number 1. He's got 2 players from the AFC South among the 9 most fascinating players going into 2015.
2 players from the 9 most fascinating. Let's do this. Let's let people put on their thinking caps and
okay.
think of some, and I will try to come up with some of who I think are the most fascinating players. I'm going to start with DeMarco Murray.
DeMarco's number 1.
You, oh, really? You just said that.
DeMarco's number 1.
So I'll let someone else go second, we'll see if we can figure out who some of these guys are coming up. But in the meantime, I had a much more important story I had to tell you about who else followed me on Twitter yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
That was BabyPoop777. So I'm like, I got to click on this one. Right?
Baby triple poop. Sevens?
That's what I asked them. Thank you, Tony. That's exactly what I said. Did that many others really have the name Baby Poop? And he said 1 through 776 were taken. Yes. So I click on the avatar. It's the cutest picture of this little kid with this little poop-eating grin on. And it says, I have a surprise for you on the top. And on the bottom it says, it's poop. I just find it hilarious that someone created a Twitter account called BabyPoop777. So they're getting all the publicity.
776
right now.
Of them.
700. I don't think that's the case, but you know how it'll do that? Like, you want your name, then you want your name followed by one, and then it suggests one to you, and it's like your name followed by, you know, some 10-digit number or something like that. And you know, not that many people have that.
Well, as a Smith, no, I've never run into that problem in my life.
Good point. Good point. I'm looking at the baby poop feed right now, and it's basically just pictures of babies that are, kind of grunting it out a little bit, I guess, is the question. Why would you go there? But it's pretty darn adorable, to be quite honest with you. So happy to have my newest Twitter follower, BabyPoop777, on board. Can't say it enough, Tony.
777, that's the opposite of the Mark of the Beast.
Is it the, I guess it would be, right?
Yeah,
seven is like the holy
number. It's a holy number. Three and seven are holy numbers.
Well, there you have it, 777. What if you had 333333333?
Ooh.
Right?
Seven threes.
Be crazy like that. All right, so we've got to take a break. What do we have? The nine most interesting. Is nine mystical? It's three times three.
I don't know. Most fascinating players in 2015, according to Adam Schein.
Welcome to Numerology, courtesy of Jaguars Today, brought to you every Friday by our friends at Claude Nolan Cadillac. Visit them at claudenolan.com or stop by and see them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111. And when you do, tell them Mike Dempsey sent you. They're going to take great care of you over at Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
59-yard attempt. Podlush will hold it. Jeremy Cain, the snapper. Scobie sweeps the leg. 59 yards away! He's got it! Jacksonville wins!
Josh Scobie as the Karate Kid. Sweep the leg. Scobie, 59-yarder. He's had a lot of highlights. I don't know if he's had any one game that you put as a single game performance. Usually it comes down for a kicker. Does he make the game winner in the final few seconds? He's had his opportunity.
That was a pretty cool one.
That was a very cool one.
With the timeout and the fans chanting Scobie's name as he jogged onto the field, that was pretty cool.
Oh, it was great. And, you know, again, it comes down to single plays. I think you get a lot of mentions. And we've had some mentions of him today, regardless, just for those game-winning kicks that he's had. And has done quite well against the Indianapolis Colts. You want to weigh in with the best single game performance in team history? Tony and I will count down our top five, very similar top fives. We've touched on a number of them already, not all of them,
yep.
But we'll go through the countdown coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. But Tony, other than Hacker, nobody loves a good list like us, right?
No, Adam Schein on NFL.com put up a list today of the most fascinating players going into 2015. DeMarco Murray, I told you, was number one. He's got a list of nine guys. So there's eight other players. Two of them are in the AFC South.
DeMarco Murray.
DeMarco Murray, number one on his list.
Okay. You're next.
Because
you have the list. I have not cheated. I have not peeked. You can attest to that. I'm going to guess four players in the AFC South.
Okay.
And you will tell me if it is among these four. Because you told me, no, there are not two from any one team.
No, they're both from a different team.
Okay. I'm going to go with J.J. Watt.
Incorrect.
I'm going to go with Julius Thomas.
Incorrect.
I'm going to go with Andre Johnson.
Number nine on the list.
Okay, Andre Johnson in Indy. And see, I could have, that's why I asked, were there two guys on the same team? I think Andre Johnson, Frank Gore. Although Andre Johnson's never been with a winner like Frank Gore, to the level Frank Gore has, going to the Super Bowl with San Fran a few years ago.
No.
And has never obviously played with a quarterback as good as Andrew Luck.
I think Andre could have a huge year.
He could have a huge year, but you know, the question, and which immediately makes me think, what kind of numbers will he put up, Tony? And that is applicable in what realm? That'd be the fantasy realm. That there's so many guys to throw to there. If you're Andrew Luck, can anyone, even T.Y. Hilton, put up the kind of numbers they're expected to put up? Maybe Johnson becomes more of a value because you get him several rounds after T.Y. Hilton, but T.Y. Hilton's going, you know, kind of late second, early third round in a 12-team league. That's about the range, probably early third round. But you got T.Y. Hilton, you got Andre Johnson, you got both of those tight ends, Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener. You've got Dante Moncrief going into his second year. They draft Philip Dorsett. They've got Frank Gore catching passes out of the backfield. Spells a big year statistically for Andrew Luck. I don't know if any one of those guys is going to meet expectations, though, individually, but we'll find out. All right, so Andre Johnson, and then Marcus Mariota would be my other guess.
No.
No.
The other player.
No, that's correct. That's a correct answer. That is a fascinating trio.
The other player is a member of the Texans.
Of the Texans. And
but not J.J. Watt.
It's not J.J. Watt. Tell me it's not one of those horrific quarterbacks.
No. Defensive side of the ball.
Okay. Is it? Will we find out if Brian Cushing gets suspended again for steroids?
No. Nope.
Oh, it's Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, Clowney.
That's who he is.
Clowney comes in at number 5 on the list.
All right.
The outside That's linebacker for the Texans. It is, because this is a guy who was the number 1 overall pick last year. He's had the knee problems his rookie year, and there's a lot of questions as to what he's going to be in his career. With all the hype for that guy coming into the National Football League, that we're already having to ask those questions coming into year 2, yeah, it is going to be fascinating.
I'm still more fascinated by J.J. Watt. Even though I know what I expect from him, it's fascinating that he delivers it to that degree.
It's a different kind of fascinating.
It is.
But yes.
All right, let me give you some guy I just wrote down as I was going through, and I'm very offense biased on this list.
That's
but
fine.
Nonetheless, I'm going to go with Adrian Peterson.
Adrian Peterson, number 4 on the list.
It had to be on there, right? All right, so I feel good about that. What about Ndamukong Suh?
No.
Come on!
Not on the list.
Aren't you fascinated to know if the fat boy is going to earn his $100 million?
Apparently, Shine is not.
Stop it, Adam Shine. I'm fascinated about what's happening. Not so much what necessarily he's going to do on the field, but just the whole situation going on with the contract of Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson is not on the list, though there is a Seahawk on this list.
Fascinating. Is it Richard Sherman?
No.
Good, because it's gotten tired at this point. It's Marshawn Lynch.
No.
It is not Marshawn Lynch. It's Jimmy Graham.
Jimmy Graham.
There you go.
Comes in at number 6, and he is a fascinating guy to keep your eye on. One of the dominant offensive tight ends in the league, obviously, going to a Seattle team that's been looking to fill in some of those weapons on the outside. Can Jimmy Graham become that for Russell Wilson? And will those numbers be even better than what they've been?
You told me all players, no coaches here.
Correct.
So I would have gone with Chip Kelly, but you've already got DeMarco
Murray.
You
have 2, 3, 7, and 8
still
left
to go. If DeMarco's on there, is LeSean McCoy on there?
No.
Shouldn't be. Good. I'm not that fascinated. What about Robert Griffin III?
No. There are 2 quarterbacks on this list at 2 and 3, but
James
is not one of them.
Garoppolo.
No.
Or any of his teammates.
No.
No. All right. Peyton Noodle Arm Manning.
Number 2 on the list.
Peyton Noodle Arm Manning.
Number 2 on the list here, right behind DeMarco Murray.
Help me with this one, Tony. Jameis? Winston?
Jameis does not make the list.
Is Jameis not on there? All right.
You got 1 quarterback, 1 rookie, and then the guy who I told you on the break, you'd never guess this.
I won't even bother to guess Greg Hardy. Let's see. 1 rookie who is fascinating, and it's not one of the, is it Todd Gurley?
Yes.
Yes.
Todd Gurley, number 7.
Very fascinating.
Who said yesterday he thinks he's going to be ready for camp, despite that torn ACL. So we'll see what's going on with Todd as he's pushing the envelope a little bit to get himself back in the fold.
Yeah, I don't need you so much this year, Todd, in my dynasty league. I'm just saying. He may turn out to be a good value. He is, if you're curious, he is falling right now. Get him in the 5th or 6th round at the moment.
Right.
Not many people drafting at this point to take advantage of that low relative value. If he is, in fact, ready for training camp, that's going to go up.
So you got 1 quarterback left. And then you have
and one guy I'm never going to guess.
You got the impossible one.
Is it a long snapper?
No.
All right.
No.
Tell me who I'm never going to guess.
Think Baltimore Ravens. Name any defensive player for the Baltimore Ravens that plays in the secondary.
Jimmy Smith.
Jimmy Smith, number 8 on this list.
That's a pretty good pull by me.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Jimmy Smith, number 8 on this list.
Why?
According to Adam Shine, there may not be a more important player in the AFC this year. Seriously.
BS. Oh, stop right there. Just stop. Now I don't even want to hear who the 9th guy is. Jimmy Smith is more important than Joe Flacco to that team. That's such over-the-top hyperbole. That's just stupid.
Armed with a new 4-year, $48 million deal, Smith is the best player at the biggest area of concern for the Ravens. The secondary is the only thing that really gives me pause when it comes to declaring Baltimore a legit Super Bowl contender. He needs to stay healthy and deliver on his promise as a top-notch cover man. So, That's his reasoning.
That's great. Okay, I'm not saying he's not important, Tony. Who would you rather lose if you're the Ravens? Joe Flacco or Jimmy Smith?
Probably Jimmy Smith.
Really? I guess he's more important than Ben Roethlisberger is, too, in that division, right?
Number three, a quarterback.
Or any other quarterback. All right, number three is a quarterback that now I'm not interested in Adam Schein's little petty list anymore. I'm going to say that it is Tony Romo.
No. Okay. Same division.
Eli Manning. I'm running out of quarterbacks.
Number three.
And I've already guessed RG3. Eli is not in any way the number three most fascinating player in the National Football League. And what preposterous reasoning did
he
get for this?
He's got a long reason for this one. The contract situation, because he is going into the last year of his deal. Going into the second year with that new offense. Odell Beckham Jr., blah, 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 blah. Because they did seem to pick it up a little bit at the end of last year.
Fascinating.
But he's not the number three.
Oh, come on. Right. I mean, come on. It's definitely more interesting. Fascinating seems a little over the top anyway. It's more interesting to me. How's the RG3 soap opera going to play out? Is a guy that they gave three first and a second round pick to acquire going to be cast aside like so much garbage at the end of a long Manhattan evening? Boy, does it smell walking down the sidewalk at 3 a.m. sometimes.
Yes, it does.
Anyhow, I mean, Eli's not in the 10 most fascinating quarterbacks this year. Are you kidding me?
He might be in that.
I'll give you 10 quarterbacks more fascinating. Both the rookies, right, at the top, Winston and Mariota. Much more interested to see how these guys adapt to the NFL than... this guy. We already had Peyton Manning. Russell Wilson, I already told you, because of the contract situation. Where are we going? Let's see. The whole New England quarterback depth chart, let's call that one. What's going to happen with the whole Tom Brady suspension and Jimmy Garoppolo? That's five right there. Sam Bradford in Philly. Can he finally do something in the final year of his rookie deal to earn himself that second contract? Is he the promise, going to take Philly to the promised land of that Chip Kelly offense? There's six right there. Let's see, what else do we have here? That's not that fascinating. Jay Cutler. I'll give you Jay, even though it's the same old story, the chance for the implosion of Jay Cutler in Chicago with his $15 million guaranteed is more fascinating. There's seven. Cam Newton is more fascinating. Can he bounce back statistically after leading the team to a 7-8-1 record and start to earn that big new money that he just got? That is more fascinating to me. Andy Dalton's boring, so we don't like him. Really, that whole division. I'm not going to put McCown in there. I'm not fascinated. That's just a train wreck waiting to happen. You know what? Ryan Tannehill, one of the young up-and-coming quarterbacks in the National Football League, 27 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. How about Blake Bortles? That's fascinating. Blake Bortles, Teddy Bridgewater, Derek Carr, lump them all in together on one spot. Who will win the battle for supremacy in the sophomore class?
Mm-hmm.
All those guys are more fascinating than
I think
Eli.
Your Jets roots are coming out here.
Are you kidding me? I didn't mention Geno Smith.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm talking about your just blind hate.
I don't have this blind hate for the Giants. I just have blind hate for you. All right? And come on, you got to admit, that's not that.
No, but I think a lot of the guys you mentioned, the reason they're fascinating are the same reasons that Eli Manning is fascinating. He just happens to be fascinating with the last name Manning as the quarterback for the New York Giants with a contract coming up for that guy and two Super Bowl championships. For a guy
Jim Plunkett,
who's still
on the list, got two as well.
For a guy who still gets questioned a lot about whether or not he deserves whatever status he has in the National Football
Colin
League.
Colin Kaepernick, Tony, is he the guy that took them to the Super Bowl and were a play away?
I already told you I wouldn't have Eli Manning at number three on this list either, but...
Can we get some more Ravens cornerbacks, please, on the list?
Jimmy.
Unbelievable.
Jimmy.
That's terrible. Adam Schein, thank you for helping us kill 7 minutes of quality broadcast time here. It's a Caudill and Cadillac Friday, folks. Again, since 1905, Caudill and Cadillac serving as your preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida. Our Friday sponsor on Jaguars today. They've got the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville. And check them out. They've got absolutely zero dealer fees. They're the only Cadillac dealer in North Florida selling and servicing the ELR. Got an on-site body shop. They'll paint and repair any Cadillac model. Call Nolan Cadillac is guaranteed to offer you the highest level in customer care and service. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac is one small step away. You can build your lasting relationship by logging on to ClaudeNolan.com, or better yet, go see them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111 for Claude Nolan Cadillac. And when you do, tell them Mike Dempsey sent you. They're going to take great care of you, our Friday sponsor here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL. All right, coming up, we run through the top five, our countdown of our best, in our opinion, Jaguars single-game performances in team history. It's coming up next. This is 1010XL 92.5 FM. So Derek Marks coming off a torn ACL. I'm just adding to the list of people who are more fascinating this year than Eli Manning. Okay? I don't know. Pick your player. He's probably more fascinating than dopey-faced Eli. Just the way it is. Friday top five. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, going to count them down here for you. Brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac every Friday. Glad to have you on board. Thanks for chiming in. Hope you have a safe and fun weekend plan. What are your weekend plans, Fat Tony?
Don't have much in the way of weekend plans. I know I'll be out at Cole Haynes on Sunday night for sports trivia if you want to come on out and test your sports trivia knowledge.
I want to test it right now. What do you got? Give me one.
I don't have
fire any. A shot across my bow, Tony. My trivia bow.
Well, in honor of today's question, this was one that we asked last week. What two Hall of Fame quarterbacks have the Jaguars retired?
Kelly and Marino.
Yes.
Yes.
That was one of the questions from last week. But I'll be out there on Sunday night. And I know tonight I'm going to go somewhere to watch the ladies in the World Cup. I'm just not sure what my plan's going to be exactly yet. So I'll definitely be.
When do they play? Sunday, you say?
They play tonight.
Tonight.
At 7:30 they play China.
Right on the edge.
It's a rematch of 1999.
All right. Well, I found something that Eli Manning might come in ahead of. Just kidding. What happened to Abby Wambach? Everyone's complaining that she's not that good anymore.
She missed the PK.
I know she missed the PK, but even before that, people were saying
she hadn't been very good in this World Cup.
Oh, there you go.
She really hadn't been. The whole team hasn't been very good in this
World watch Cup. It. Honestly, I don't know what else is on tonight. I'm caught up on all my programs. Right now, I got Murder in the First going on, which is outstanding on TNT. Love that. What do we got? The Last Ship came back last week.
I don't watch that show.
True Detective.
How was the first episode?
I thought it was good. You know, some people are like, it's not as good as last year. Well, it's one episode.
Right.
They're setting the baseline for, you know, what the story and who the characters are going to be.
Last year started pretty strong, though.
Yeah, I know. last year was phenomenal. I think it's going to be hard to top it. Just so you know, Vince Vaughn is not a detective, despite being in the cast. You know, Colin Farrell, Vince Vaughn, you thought might be like McConaughey and Harrelson. The lead guys, but
I don't think so.
They're lead guys. They're just not both detectives. Although Colin Farrell, so I'm into that. We're going to Legoland this weekend.
Cool.
It's the annual trip. Waiting for him to grow out of it, quite frankly. Because I mean, how many times can you see the same Lego statues in the little Lego village?
At least once a year,
I guess. But it's not my birthday. It's a young lad turning 11.
Again, you're asking the guy who's seen Mad Max 6 times in a theater. I could go see the same thing over and over and enjoy it.
Good point. At least Mad Max has moving images. You sit there and you're like, oh yeah, there's that Hulk statue.
Right,
again.
And you're not paying theme park prices.
Correct.
You're paying
and driving 2.5 hours to get there. I love you, Colin. I love you. That's why we're going.
That's right.
I didn't love you. If I didn't love you, I'd just complain and then not go.
Right.
Okay? I'm going to complain just a smidge. It'll be fantastic. It'll be amazing. All right, let's count them down. Today, your Friday top five is asking you, and it's brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships today, who are the guys that put up the top five performances, single game performances in Jaguar team history? Let's start the countdown.
Number five.
Five. Come on.
Five.
High five.
Number five.
All right, let's get this thing rolling. We've been talking about it throughout the show, but at number five for me, a performance that's already been mentioned at least once, and that is, we'll go back to the spookiest performance on my list, because it occurred on Halloween afternoon in 2010. That would be David Garrard against the Dallas Cowboys. Not only the four touchdowns, adding the one rushing touchdown, 17 of 21 passing in that game for David Garrard. So the ball hit the ground four times in that game for the Jaguars offense, 260 yards passing, including those four passing touchdowns, added a rushing touchdown in a 35-17 win on the road against Dallas in a game that, again, before the season started, may have been the most improbable win on a regular season schedule for the Jags outside of maybe Denver and Seattle a couple of years ago, the first year under Gus Bradley. But the performance by David Garrard in that game gets him to number five on my list.
Outstanding performance in that game. Not going to argue with his inclusion in your top five. He didn't make it in my top five. Perhaps if he was 17 of 20 instead of 21, he would have. Instead, I went with little man Stewart, James Stewart, 15 carries for 102 yards. It's pretty good, but it's
right.
Not crazy. But five of those runs ended in the end zone. Five touchdowns on October 12th, 1997 against the Philadelphia Eagles. And Tony, fantasy football owners were chasing James Stewart's touchdowns for to basically until his next injury came along. And I can't think of the time frame right now, but it was like, oh, wow, James Stewart, he's the goal line guy. He's the guy. He's the guy. It's one of those outliers, man. You don't have too many five-touchdown games in National Football League history, never mind expecting them much in a career. I'll never forget my visionary statement last season. I was doing a show on Sirius, and Ben Roethlisberger threw six touchdowns. I say, well, at least we know one thing. He's not going to throw six touchdowns again this week. And then he did.
Yes, he did.
So sometimes it happens, but I had a little man in it with 15 for 102 and five touchdowns back in 97. Those are our number fives, and let's continue the countdown.
One, two, three, four.
Two, three, four.
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 Number four.
You go back to the playoff run after the 96 season, and somebody already mentioned Tony Boselli against Bruce Smith. Absolutely viable candidate for a top-five performance. We mentioned Natron Means with 175 yards rushing in that game after having only one 100-yard game all season long. But instead, this was my top-five performer from that game.
Clyde's got it at the 20. He's at the 15. He's at the 10. He's at the 5. Clyde Simmons, touchdown, Jaguars!
Clyde Simmons, two sacks in the game, Tony, and most importantly, a 20-yard interception return for a TD in a game the Jags are down early, gets him on the board, and the Jags would go on to shock the football world with a 30-27 victory. And, you know, it's tough to quantify sometimes defensive players. They don't have the same kind of stat lines, but he was all over the place that day. And the way you listen to some of the veterans on the football team or the longtime Jags that were there in that game, they talk about the impact that he had on it. I know he ranks very highly on your list as well, but Clyde Simmons coming in with that two sack, that INT for a touchdown performance on December 28, 1996 in the wild card game against the Buffalo Bills.
You know, I said it earlier in the show, it was difficult for me to pull out the individual performances from those games. I got one from each of the games, though, here on my list at number four and number three. And number four for me was one of the most famous plays in Jacksonville Jaguars history. You hear it on the open from time to time. And that was Mark Brunell's run against the Denver Broncos.
Brunell under center. Sends Keenan in motion from the near to the far side. He'll take the snap and drop back to throw. Pressure coming. He's jumping out to the near side. Pump action. Cuts across the 50. Breaks a tackle at the 45. He's at the 40. Mark Brunell running to the far sideline. Turns the corner. 35-30. Down to the 25. An inside move. Leaping for the 21. Mark Brunell with a masterful run of 29 yards.
January 4th, 1997, obviously the week after that upset win over the Buffalo Bills that you were just talking about, that performance by Clyde Simmons. Mark Brunell, that run will be remembered forever in Jacksonville Jaguars lore. He rushed for 44 yards in that game, including that 29-yarder that you just heard. 18 of 29 passing, 245 yards, and two touchdowns for Mark Brunell that day in the improbable upset of the Denver Broncos, 30-27.
112 was his quarterback rating that day. It wasn't just the run, is the point. You know, David Garrard had a big playoff run as well that helped seal a game, put them in position
to win.
245 with the two touchdowns, no picks. The efficiency, averaged nearly 8.5 yards per attempt in that game. As you said, seven carries for 44 yards on the ground. Got it done in all angles. So let's move. I'm feeling we'll breeze through number three on the countdown. Let's find out.
Three.
Three.
Easy as one.
Tree.
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 Number three.
Yeah, number three, you just mentioned it, Clyde Simmons against Buffalo. And it was difficult to pick out which performance I wanted from this game. I thought about going with Chris Hudson just because he knocked Jim Kelly out of the game. And that was a turning point in this contest as well, as they wind up winning just 30-27 in this thing. But Clyde Simmons with two sacks and a pick six, an incredible performance from him among a bunch of really standout performances from the Jags that day.
I went with this guy, number three, a left-handed quarterback by the name of Mark Brunell. And he played in the 1996 postseason. In fact,
hey,
it was January 4th, 97, Tony, against the Denver Broncos. You may have heard of it. Wait a minute. Didn't we just do this? So basically, we had the same guys. We just had them in reverse order at 4 and 3. I had Clyde Simmons at 4. You had him at 3. I had Mark Brunell at 3. You had him at 4. But clearly, we both think those rank among the top performances in Jaguar team history. Moving along.
Number two.
Mark under center gives the ball to Fred, running to the left, cutting it back. He's at the 25. He's at the 20. Fred coming outside at the 15. Fred's at the 10. 5. Touchdown. Fred Taylor, his fourth touchdown of the night.
Wow, he's wearing out that corner of the end zone, that's for sure.
However many corners they had, there's four, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much wore them all out that night, Tony. We both had the same one here at number two.
Yes, we do.
Fred Taylor, 30 carries, 234 yards, and three touchdowns. Caught three passes for 14 yards, scored another one through the air in that game. A Jaguar single game record, a record for a Pittsburgh Steeler opponent in that game. And, you know, maybe the only thing that, to me, that keeps it from topping the list, I mean, that's pretty impressive numbers. Couple of things. One, the number one is so far up there in its own category. I mean, among the all-time great games in its category. We'll get to that. But, you know, Freddie has talked about how he left a lot of yards on the sideline in that game. And Fred's been very open about this fascinating story, how, you know, he didn't take as good a care of himself in the early days of his career. And quite frankly, he'd gone out too much leading up to the game that weekend and didn't feel great. And feels like he had the NFL record in him for most rushing yards in a game had he gotten a little bit more rest, and who knows how it works out. Sometimes you don't feel your best. You know, you put on the Michael Jordan flu game performance. Fred Taylor had 234 yards.
Yep.
It was spectacular. He feels like he probably left 75 on the bench.
You know, and talking about that game, and really number one and two on this list, it's not only about the performances that these guys had in those games, it's about who they did it against, too. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2000 were a dominant defensive football team, and that Fred Taylor was able to accomplish what he did, 30 carries, 234 yards, three touchdowns on the ground. He added another receiving touchdown, so four touchdowns on the night for him in front of the entire football-watching nation on Monday Night Football. An incredible, incredible game from Fred Taylor, and it was just one of many that Fred gave us, but I think this is clearly the best individual performance that Fred ever had in a single game.
And then, finally, that brings us to whatever's on the top of our list.
5, 4, 3, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1
Smith against the Baltimore Ravens. 15 catches, 291 yards, 3 touchdowns. That's 19.4 yards per reception for Jimmy that day. When you take a look at who was involved on that Ravens defense that year, you're looking at Ray Lewis, Jamie Sharper, Peter Boulware, Dwayne Starks, Chris McAllister, Rod Woodson. You know those names, anybody? I mean, these are dominant players in the history of this game. The Jags scored 36 points that day, with Jimmy Smith leading the charge on a defense that allowed 165 in the season.
That's insane.
They scored 36 that day on a defense that allowed 165 for the year. I saw an article from ESPN that was written in 2010 that ranked Jimmy's performance as the fourth best in regular season NFL history among wide receiver individuals.
They basically gave up 10 points a game,
right,
in their other games, roughly, a little less than that, I think. And I'm with you. And it's his place in NFL history with that game that puts it at the top of the list for me, Tony. To this day, it's been surpassed a couple of times since he's done it, or actually once since he's done it, by Calvin Johnson. And had, you know, he was, I think, fifth all time when he set the mark for the Jags with 291 and now stands just sixth all time. Flipper Anderson still with the most in a single game with 336. Calvin Johnson with 329. Stephon Page with the Chiefs back in 85 at 309. Jim Benton, everybody remembers him with the Cleveland Rams from the 40s, had 303. And Cloyce Box, Tony, was my favorite of the footballing boxing brothers.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Okay.
Cloyce Box for the Lions versus the Baltimore Colts back in 1950. So Jimmy Smith topping the best outing. Next guy on the list is Jerry Rice. That's pretty good with 289.
Pretty darn good.
15 for 291 and three touchdowns and a spectacular performance ranks at the top of our list. A couple in on the I'm reading ahead here. you see the last text we got?
Yeah.
A couple in on the Boston Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. The year of the Hail Mary and the 59-yard field goal. MJD had an awesome game against the Browns at home. And just going on to say how many, he sure had some awesome games. I went back and looked up the numbers from the game the Jags ran for the 375 against the Colts. Jones-Drew in that game, which is more impressive? Maurice or Fred here? Maurice had 15 carries for 166, averaged 11.1, and scored two touchdowns. Fred only had 9 carries. Went for 131. He averaged 14.6 yards a carry in that game.
It's mojo in total.
And he scored a touchdown.
Mojo had the 166 with the two touchdowns. He also had a catch for 15 yards. He had two kick returns, including a touchdown on a kick return and a 13-yard punt return in that game. I had it among my honorable mentions.
Yeah, me too. And Keenan McCardell, 16 catch, 232-yard game we mentioned earlier. Justin Blackman, 7 for 236. Natron Means got some love among the honorable mentions. Everyone in the 62-7 victory over the Miami Dolphins.
Right.
Qualified as well. So
a couple more I wanted to point
yes.
out too. Mark Brunell versus Cincinnati in December of 1996, 21 of 34 passing, 356 yards and a touchdown. That one touchdown was a 48-yard pass to McCardell that put him ahead 27-20, a game they would need if they were going to get into the playoffs. They win that game 30-27 and was a key win in that improbable run at the end of the year.
A lot of 30-27s, man.
96, that was kind of the magic number for him. And I wanted to point out Mojo against San Diego in 2007. Nothing all that special in the stat line. That was 12 carries, 33 yards, and a touchdown, one catch for 4 yards. But it was the game where he had the monster block on Sean Merriman. I found a list Complex did of the 50 most brutal hits in the history of the NFL. They did it in 2013. Mojo's block against Merriman came in at number 22 all time on that list.
That means there's 49 to go. There's Monday's show for Jaguars today.